on Soul Mind Body Medicine, Dr. Z. Gong Sha teaches a breakthrough soul healing system that empowers people to heal themselves and to heal others. Each week, learn new soul healing wisdom, knowledge, and practice that will transform your life. Dr. Sha offers listeners his personal remote soul healing during each show, Soul Mind Body Medicine with Dr. Z. Gong Sha, broadcast every Friday at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
Welcome to Mind, Brain, and Body with Dr. Michael John Kell. All comments, views, and opinions expressed on this show are solely those of the host, guest, and callers. Now helping you live a more productive and fulfilling life, Dr. Michael John Kell.
And thank you very, very much, as always, for taking time out to listen to our show. Today's title of the show is called Mirror, Mirror on the Wall, Who is the Most Successful of All? And the answer should be for all of us, why, you are, of course. And that's sort of the purpose of this show, and that's really the purpose why we've been talking to one of our favorite guests, that's bad English, I know, one of our most favorite guests, Jacob Teitelbaum, who lives in Hawaii most of the time. And as you guys know, he's been on the show maybe two or three times in the past, and we've talked about chronic fatigue syndrome. We've talked about, I don't remember the things we talked about, but he really knows what he's talking about. He's helped a lot of people. And has a great website, which he will tell us about. But his purpose is to be a healer and help all of us be the most healthy, happy, successful people we can. Good morning, Jacob.
Good morning, Michael. Great to be with you. Aloha from Hawaii.
What time is it there now?
5 in the morning.
Oh, well. See, he's an early riser, too, because he has so much to do for the world, he doesn't have time to sleep, even.
Actually, I sleep till noon, but for you, what can I say? How could I say no?
Yeah, so today we're going to talk a little bit about, if I remember right, sometimes people are out there and they start modifying their diet and they're starting to do some exercise, and it just doesn't seem like it always works as well as they would like it to work. And mm-hmm. So I guess you're going to talk a little bit about some of the reasons why some people have to put a little extra work, a little extra effort, I guess, into getting down to a healthy body mass with a good amount of muscle and not too much extra fat. Yes?
Mm-hmm. Yep, we're going to talk about, I'm tempted to write a book called Is Your Metabolism Stupid? Taken after Clinton's Is the Economy Stupid? Uh-huh. That most people who can't lose weight, it's not because they have poor willpower, it's because their metabolism's stuck and they're just not burning the calories. So we're going to talk about how to get your metabolism started today so you can lose the weight that you haven't been able to with eating a healthy diet and without doing yo-yo stuff.
Before you start, let me ask you one thing, because this is oftentimes I think what people think, and I think we're going to talk a little bit about that. It's probably a factor, you know, having not a quite efficient thyroid as you should.
Mm-hmm.
But I've always found, you know, when you actually look at the studies and things, that the great majority of people that are overweight, you know, they think they have a lower metabolism,
mm-hmm.
but they actually have a higher metabolism. You know, not so much on the lean, you may actually calculate lean body mass, but based on their size, because they care about how much extra muscle to carry fat around, and fat does have some metabolic, you know, needs, not, you know, maybe 10% of muscle or something like that. And so it's not like the body, I think they think my body doesn't work, you know what I'm saying? And mm-hmm. actually, bodies work pretty good, but I think sometimes when you start to try to lose the fat, these other issues pop up,
mm-hmm.
which you're going to be talking about. And I know that one of the major ones is, you know, is somewhat mild degrees probably of hypothyroidism, which the doctors won't tell you you have, but you probably actually really do have.
Well, there's a study that just came out that's showing within the normal range alterations in thyroid hormone function in the people with the lowest normal thyroid function versus the highest in that range
uh-huh.
were about 16 pounds different in weight.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, like I said, I don't believe it when the doctor says your thyroid test is normal. It just doesn't mean a thing. And if you're tired, if you can't lose weight, period, but especially if you're tired, achy, cold, intolerant, you deserve a trial of natural bioidentical prescription thyroid hormone called Armour Thyroid by prescription. And I don't care what the blood tests show because the blood tests are basically full of hooey. And study after study after study after study after study after study, I can go on and on. has shown that the thyroid blood tests are utter nonsense and not reliable. But, you know, we're creatures of habit. We can't trust our ears and our eyes to ask you what's wrong, so we need to have something in black and white, no matter how meaningless it is. So we use the blood test.
Lucas, can you talk a little bit about, because I think a lot of people don't really understand, you know, what a blood test really means, you know, and how they, and how the plus or minus two standard deviations are established, and the difference between, you know, an individual within a population and the individual themselves compared to other individuals, which you just mentioned, because I think you said it was like 16 pounds more weight in people on the lower part of the at the normal curve than the higher part. Did I hear that right?
Yep, pretty close, 12 to 16 pounds.
Yeah, that's in the 16 pounds. Sorry.
So it's an amazing thing with doctors, you know, because it used to be that you listen to the person's heart and lungs, and you listen to the person's story, the latter being the most important, and you figured out what was going on. Part of that was called the art of medicine.
And he asked the questions. And he asked them questions.
And as the father of godfather of medicine, Sir William Osler, said, you know, you give the patient 5 minutes, and they'll tell you what's wrong with them. And he said, if you give them another 5 minutes, they'll tell you how to get them well. Here's a pretty smart fellow. So the thing about blood testing, which is doctors like to rely on this black and white stuff, is that doctors don't know where the normal range comes from. They presume that the normal range means that the world's experts got together and decided that if it's in this range, it's just fine. And for most blood tests, there's no such panel of experts. All that happens for most tests is the lab checks 100 blood tests. Hopefully they should do it on people that are very healthy, but sometimes they'll just do it on everybody and anybody, or on the testing that was sent in by the doctor because they suspected a problem. And they take those 100 tests and they apply it to my two standard deviations. The highest and lowest, 2.5% of the population, is defined as abnormal, and the rest, the 95 in the middle, make up the normal range. So let's use the analogy of shoe sizes. Say I wanted a normal range for shoe sizes. I would take 100 people that came by in the mall, and I'd get a normal range of, say, 4 to 13. If a couple babies strolled by in strollers, I'd get a normal range of 1. At the low end, a couple Texans, maybe a normal range of 15. And
yeah. Probably a little small, Jacob.
Exactly. So if you have a normal range for shoes of 4 to 13, that means if you and I got the wrong pair of shoes on and we were wearing a size 5 and went to the doctor and we couldn't even put the shoe on our toe, the doctor would say the test was just fine. We're in the normal range. And the same thing happens with thyroid and other functions. Now, with thyroid, there is actually an expert panel that for TSH testing, which is all that most doctors use, that did come up with a normal range, which has continued to change. When I started practice, there was no TSH. Over the years, they said anything under 15 was normal, and anything under 12, and anything under 8, and now they use 5. And about 4 years ago, or 5 years ago, actually, the expert panel said it should be anything over 3 is low thyroid, but most doctors are just still ignoring that. So even using that panel, half of the people with hypothyroidism are told they're normal. And the studies are showing that even that is ludicrous. If you have fatigue, achiness, weight gain, cold intolerance, if you have two of those, even one, you deserve a trial of thyroid hormone, period.
Yeah, this is kind of, so you mentioned, Osler and stuff and, you know, the old doctors. And, people may not know, I mean, you know this, but I don't know if everybody knows this. He says, like Jacob said, in the old days, he went to your doctor and he talked to you and had years of experience talking to people and did a few physical examinations and maybe measured your temperature. They didn't have a lot of blood work in those days, and they did a pretty good job diagnosing lots of things.
Mm-hmm.
And then they started looking at lab tests to confirm the diagnosis, which is a good idea, right? You know, is there a test we can do that would help, you know, we get two choices to pick one over the other. And so that was, like, lab testing was a good idea. But what's happened, even when I went to school, and it's probably the same time you went to medical school, you know, is that they teach you less and less diagnostic skills, and they don't encourage them very much. And you start relying on laboratory and x-rays and MRIs as your diagnostic tool, essentially, which is a real problem. One, because individuals are different than that, you know, each person is, you know, every American is an American, but they're all different. you know. And so when we go, when you go overseas, and they say, where are you? What are you? I'm an American. Well, you know, you can't, like, that doesn't mean very much. You know, you have, where do you come from in America? Well, I came from California. Well, that makes a difference than coming from Georgia. You know, but what's happened is the doctors just, you know, believe lab tests because they don't have time, I guess, to talk to people anymore. And what's happened is that everybody's been lumped into one thing. And, you know, it reminds me of, just like in quantum mechanics, you know, there's a big argument going on about what the wave function means. You know, and I think the data highly supports the fact that a wave function is an ensemble of a whole bunch of statistical systems. So it doesn't represent one particle because you can't really, you know, you can't make a conclusion from one thing. It's a sum of all of them, and just like our laboratory tests are. It's an ensemble average of everybody that thinks healthy. And that tells us basically nothing about the individual unless they're really, really far off one side or the other.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and then a lot of times they don't normalize. I find they're not normalizing things properly. You know, if you're measuring metabolic rate, you better be looking at lean body mass. You know, if you're looking at thyroid, there may be something, you know, we need to divide it by in order to, you know, take out, make the range of people closer.
Mm-hmm.
And they just don't do that. It's a really sad thing.
Yeah. And it's a funny thing, though. I mean, we still even think that they have to take the range and do this and do that and the other, but it comes down to shoe size. We could do anything we wanted to try to measure down the thing. Oh, maybe we should adjust it for the height for the shoe size and the weight for the shoe size, and we could keep getting that normal range lower and lower, but the bottom line is, how does the shoe fit?
That's right.
Is it too tight or is it too loose? And the same with thyroid. How do you feel metabolically? What are the symptoms of thyroid doing? Are you constipated, which is a sign of low thyroid, or do you have diarrhea? Are you cold intolerant or heat intolerant? Are you, you know, are you tired or kind of zippy? So, you know, these are the symptoms you look at, and by simply asking the person and then giving them a trial of the thyroid to see if they feel better or worse on it, you know.
Plus, you do. I'm sure you do the old Rhoda Barnes temperature checking in the morning.
Well, you don't even have to do that. That's one more helpful piece of information. Because, again, what Rhoda found, and I've had the honor of lecturing at his foundation, he was a brilliant, he was one of the godfathers of endocrinology and just did some brilliant work. And by checking your underarm temperature when you wake up in the morning, and I prefer, frankly, to just check a random temperature during the day by mouth.
Mm-hmm.
I think that gives even more information, as long as you recognize that if you're at 98.2 or lower during the day, or if you want to check the underarm temperatures, you could look for the 97.6, 97.8. But under 98.2, 98.3, and you have these symptoms, that's one more useful information. But interestingly, do you know what the most accurate test, looking at the scientific studies, that's the most sensitive and specific for low thyroid? It's an ankle reflex. If the relaxation of the tendon and the ankle is slow, that's a very, very good test for low thyroid.
Have they found a way to quantify that yet?
There is actually a little machine can do it, but the main thing you do is you just tap the thing and see it. You look at it with your eyes. But I don't think most doctors ever check that. They don't really know how to look for it.
I remember when I was in medical school and stuff, I'm not really a clinician, but, you know, the little things that are sort of entertaining to do when you can see things, you know, physical mm-hmm. medicine. That's mm-hmm. the one thing I remember is that when I first hypothyroid guy said the ankle goes bing real fast, and the guy did hardly worked at all, so slow, and I'm going, that's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just simple things. My body is an amazing instrument, and you don't have to do too much to it to test it to see the difference like you bring up. But a machine is pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. Well, part of what I'm trying to teach in medicine these days is to recapture and reclaim both the art and science of medicine.
Uh-huh.
Our current healthcare system is the most expensive per capita by far in the world, and yet we're somewhere around the level of Albania and Syria in terms of our healthcare quality when you look at our report card. And that tells me that there's a problem. We have over 200,000 Americans dying each year from medications, and those estimates go as high as many as a million Americans dying from the healthcare system every year, getting wrong legs cut off, getting the wrong treatment, and even when they get the right medication, the medication kills them. For arthritis pain, for example, Motrin family medications kill over 16,500 Americans unnecessarily every year. And I say unnecessarily because they're natural remedies that have been shown to be twice as effective as Motrin, but cheaper and very, very safe.
Plus, if the doctor followed up, they'd prevent a lot of them, you know, without the patient.
Yeah, but the thing is, we go where the money is, and we go with what drives the healthcare system, which is the big bucks. And so the art of medicine is, as you say, exactly so, doctors don't have the time to listen anymore. The average doctor visit is on the order of about 5 minutes per person. And if you have anything that's at all complex, you're just out of luck, because unless there's a procedure that can be done, if you need a heart bypass, they can spend more time. But if you have depression, if you have chronic fatigue, if you have chronic pain, your doctor is allowed 5 minutes for the visit. And if they want to spend more, they're basically going to lose money on you. So what do? We do tests that can be done in that five-minute time and throw medicine to somebody and get them out the door. And the medicine we're going to give is not the best medicine. It's the one that is the most expensive, because the drug companies pay for pretty much all of our education, including all of our journals, all of our conferences, and those good-looking drug reps that walk in the door. And nowadays, even our professors are on the payroll of the drug companies, if you take a look at how much money they're getting from the different drug companies. So basically, we've lost the art of medicine, or losing it, which is the ability to listen to the person, use their intuition, and to use words to heal as opposed to destroy, like many doctors do. And then the science has been taken over by big pharma, by the drug companies. So we're in deep. We're in deep doo-doo these days in the healthcare system.
Jacob, do you have to deal much, because I know you lecture all over around the world and stuff, but do you have much day-to-day contact with, like, new medical students or brand-new doctors? Because I don't really have that much anymore.
Mm-hmm. That's one of the nice things about being a teacher. I'll have a lot of health professionals from across the spectrum. It's not only MDs and DOs. And a lot of them are the newbies. And what I like to do is get them just around residency. There's a two-day and three-day CD set that I have that teaches doctors and the layperson, if they want, how to treat chronic fatigue syndrome effectively and fibromyalgia, and then another three-day set on treating pain using a mix of natural prescription
therapy. There's good books on it, too, I might add.
And we have books that are great, From Fatigue, Fantastic, and Pain-Free 1, 2, 3, and I'll be modest and say they're wonderful. But for the med students and residents, those CD sets that usually cost $400, mm-hmm. we give it to them for free. So we want to get them early, and what I tell them is, look, you know, you only have one instrument in the toolkit. You have a hammer. That's what the drugs and surgery are. That's all you've been taught about. And you've been taught that everything else besides what the drug companies or expensive surgeries are nonsense, when they're not. You've been taught to not bother looking at the science except what they're spoon-fed. We will teach you what the science actually says and give you the references. And when you do this, you'll be able to heal more people, because you'll have a whole toolkit. And not just that, you won't have to work for the insurance companies. You can work for the patient, charge a little bit more, and still have people beating a path to your door. Would you like to work for yourself instead of the insurance companies? Would you like to have half-hour visits or 45-minute visits with your patients and make a good living and have time with your family and have your patients come and getting healthy? And they go, yeah.
That's a new concept. I didn't know that was about. I don't know medicine was about that anymore, you know? Because it seems like contact is that you know, the problem with training systems are, and doctors seem to be really more susceptible to this than some other professions are, other than lawyers maybe, they're the same way, that, you know, like how they are taught, you know, in that, you know, the 4 years of medical school and the residency, it almost like gives them a mindset that's almost impossible later on to change, you know, because they're very recipe-driven. And the problem is, you know, a great chef uses recipes but changes them depending on who's eating the food and how they, you know, what ingredients are available, and it seems like a lot of the, you know, they're not being even given the idea of that concept. I mean, other than, you know, what you're doing, in that, you know, if you train people to do 5 minute visits and that's all you ever have to do, and you have to do lab tests, you know, if you don't get to them soon, that's what they think medicine is. You know, and I don't think you can train them later, too much later, which is really bad for us, the population.
You know, well, I hate to say it, but medicine has become a religion these days. I call it scientism.
Yep,
and it's like any other fundamentalist religion. And God bless, you know, I'm a man of faith myself, but I think, you know, science is a wonderful tool, but it's a god-awful religion. And it's dealt with all the fierceness. If you've ever worked with medical boards.
I don't like those cases.
These people,
that's a subject with me.
Well-meaning as they are not going with the science. You can give them a box of studies, and they won't even look at it. They said, it's not what I do. You lose your license. And, you know, it's funny. They said on CNN the other day where doctors in California who are drug addicts and alcoholics are allowed to keep working and cutting on patients and doing whatever. But if you're a holistic doctor and you're giving somebody thyroid with a normal test, there's a good chance they'll take your license away. And they've shown this over and over again. If you give a herbal medicine or if you give nutritional support, and the funny thing is that in these cases, the patients are usually thrilled. You know, in most medical cases, the patient is upset or they're dead. And they're going out to the doctor, and the doctor's, and they say, oh, you know, George, anybody could have cut off the wrong leg. You know, here's a slap on the wrist, and write a paper on how I will not cut off the wrong leg next time and take the time to look at the chart. But in these holistic cases, very often the patients are protesting outside the board office saying, my doctor saved my life. All the rest of you fools basically said I was dead and there's nothing we can do. And he didn't dot an I across a T. And they don't usually say we're taking it away for holistic reasons. They find some utter nonsense, like your charting was not adequate. It was sad because I have actually worked for the medical board and as a peer reviewer and physician supervisor for decades in Maryland, and they were pretty good, and now they're basically just a band of outlaws. They don't even know it. I finally left the state. I've never had a board action against me that, you know, was that wasn't closed. And
hey, Jacob, I still think you're an excellent doctor.
Well, part of it is, and I teach the doctors, when the board comes after you, don't get defensive. Use it as an opportunity to teach, and that usually gets disarming. But it's just the laws have to be changed to allow access to care in this country to holistic medicine, because, frankly, it's a religion. And the laws are changed to give them absolute power. Because you can't sue a medical board. They said, well, if we're afraid that we're going to get sued by doctors or people, and so we're not going to serve on the boards. And the board said, oh, well, we'll give you immunity. You can't be sued. And they said, really? We can do anything we want, and there's nobody that can sue us? And now you have the inquisitional courts. You basically have no checks and balances. And the laws really have to be written in the state, stating that peer review must occur in holistic cases, just like every other case. The law says you have to be reviewed by somebody in your own special
set of standards of how to review.
And it needs to be that if a holistic case is brought before the board, it has to be reviewed by somebody who's board certified in holistic medicine. And I see reviewers are basically their dermatologists. I mean, they have no clue. And it really is a criminal travesty in terms of what's going on. But, you know, it's anytime, and there's the old saying, power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. You've given a religion called scientism absolute power to destroy anybody who believes otherwise.
Hey, this is nice. We had our quantum mechanical analogy. Now we have our Catholic analogy.
God bless.
Inquisition?
It is. These are inquisitional courts.
And like they were against science, too. I mean, true facts.
Yeah, and I've sat on these. You know, I've worked with these commissions for decades, and they used to be good people doing the best they can, and they're still good people. The people who killed everybody who weren't their religion, the inquisitional courts, they were very pious folks.
Yeah, they were.
They thought they were very good. They thought they were curing, you know, the world of the devil and making it. And that's basically what medicine has devolved into. It's really pretty pathetic. And like I say, you know, it's. I'm as much friends with people that are very fundamentalist and pious as I am. With atheists, I think, you know, there's arguments to be made on all sides, but it doesn't belong in medicine. It needs to be science instead of scientism. And what we get is we get the 42nd, some argue 36th most effective healthcare system for the most money, and the fourth leading cause of death in the United States is seeing your doctor.
So I say never go to the hospital unless you want to die.
Basically.
So anything you possibly avoid it, no matter what.
I hate to say it, and that's why I tell people, if you're feeling well, stay the heck away from your physician. And much of what you're doing is scaring people into doing these tests. And some of them do have some preventive merit. But to a large degree, it's just scaring up money and work. And we scare the bejeevers out of people, and it's not really healthy. And the way we're doing it is really basically just follow the money trail. And it's not just pathetic, it's deadly.
Yeah, the other thing, and we're getting off your subject, so I'll get you back on in a sec, but the other thing, too, is this, I mean, you know this, I'm going to say you know to be true, okay? I mean, you could be a neurosurgical problem that you don't know anything about, okay? But if I provide you with, you know, here's this, go to the literature, check this out, this out, this out, here's the best places to go. You know, you may have to open up a book of surgery and kind of get a feel for what the procedure is or what they're trying to do. You know, mm-hmm. look at the literature and stuff. But you can come up with a, even without being an expert in that area per se, because you're intelligent and you understand physiology and things, is you could, you know, train yourself to get a feel for what, if that's reasonable or not.
Mm-hmm.
And the sad part is,
no, you can't do it. Don't have an MD.
Well,
you're not allowed to do that.
I'll give you the MD, okay?
What kind of fool goes on the internet and just doesn't listen to the doc? I mean, these are the kind of things.
I know, but you have to go to the literature. But it is, you think. But what's going to happen is, I think my point was, is that, you know, when before they had all the specialization, everybody's, you know, when before, you know, being forced into specialization, because even if you want to be a GP, it's hard, you can't make any money in the regular system.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and what it's done is it's forced people to limit their capabilities so much that mm-hmm. they're not even willing anymore to learn anything new.
Yep.
Because, you know, if I don't get sued or the medical board will go after me or something's going to happen, you're yep. not realizing that when you get a license, it actually says, you know, in Georgia it says a license to practice, you know, licensed medicine. It means you can practice any kind of medicine, any kind of surgery, mm-hmm. as long as you had 1 year of internship. Now, it doesn't mean you should be doing neurosurgery, but you know what? If you wanted to and you got trained to do it, you don't have to go through a residency program to do it, but you better make sure you're the best,
mm-hmm.
you know. But, mm-hmm. I mean, that's what the law says, but that's not how it's applied.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which is the old law was the old people, you know, the country doctors, new
yep.
the specialists, things. But let's get back on your thing. So we talked a little bit about, you know, the fact that hypothyroidism, estimates have varied. I guess old Broder Barnes used to think 40% of the population was, which in his day probably means a lot more today are, but I bet it's at least 10-20% probably.
Well, looking at the American Academy of Clinical Endocrinology, which is the largest endocrinologist group, and how they said even the TSH test should be interpreted, over 26 million Americans suffer with hypothyroidism.
That's just adults, Jake? They're talking about adult Americans?
No.
Are there kids, too?
Cause children, it really amazes me. I used to think, no, look, the kids are fine, you know, they don't have hypothyroidism, but that's being turned on its head.
Yeah.
Our environment is so rife with chemicals.
Right.
That are called endocrine disruptors. They're over. It's funny. If I want to take a chemical and put it in your mouth and call it a medicine,
uh-huh.
it takes me $400 to $800 million to put it through all the safety studies and effectiveness studies to get it through the FDA process. An average of $400 to $800 million per chemical that I call a medication. But if I just throw that medicine in your food instead, I don't have to spend a penny.
Or in your cosmetics.
Or in their cosmetics, because the skin will absorb things. It's just like putting it through your mouth a lot of times. And people need to realize that. If you put something in a cream, a lot of creams will deliver it right through the skin. And let's say if I have somebody who can't eat in the hospital, I'm going to rub oils on them, like fish oil and flax or soybean oil. Mm-hmm. The fish gets kind of smelly, but just use a little bit. And you can give them nutrition right through the skin a lot of times. And if you're putting something in a cream that has 28 dyes in it, why don't you just check the stuff in your mouth?
Only one's been studied, you know.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. According to the FDA laws, you can throw whatever you want into the food supply unless it has been proven to be harmful. Get that. You don't have to show that there's any safety, whatever. It's as long as nobody's come along and shown that, no, arsenic is dangerous, so you can't put it in. But if nobody's done the study, and on these new chemicals, nobody's going to look at them, they won't look at them, because then they might see that they're going to kill you or cause autoimmune disease or cause cancer or block your hormones, whatever. So they can just throw it in the food supply, and there's over 80,000 chemicals now thrown in our environment. There's an excellent report by the World Health Organization, and there's many reports out there that are showing that if you go ahead and look at the hormonal function in this country and worldwide, that many, 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 many chemicals block the hormone systems, including thyroid function, and you won't see it on the blood test because the thyroid is functioning properly. It makes the thyroid hormone, but it blocks the what are called cell receptors, and you're getting hypothyroidism, low testosterone. In fact, I do a weekly newsletter. It's a free email newsletter for those that are interested.
It's a good one, I might add.
Oh, thank you. And if you go on my website, it's vitality101.com. You can just sign up for the newsletter there. The last issue was on testosterone and natural testosterone. Now we think of testosterone as a bane of the bodybuilders, but natural testosterone in males over 50 who have a low or low normal testosterone dramatically increases lifespan, decreases heart attack deaths, probably is associated with a lower risk of prostate cancer. They now have 18 studies that have shown no increased risk of prostate cancer from treating with testosterone or having higher testosterone levels. It helps improve diabetes, decreases depression, increases muscle mass, increases fat loss. Natural testosterone is a godsend. But again, it's, you know, you're starting to hear about it now because they couldn't patent the natural testosterone because it's natural. That's why natural things are generally not used in medicine, is they're not patentable. But what they did is patent the delivery systems, and we're going to hear more and more about it. It will break into mainstream instead of just being in holistic things. But the chemicals in our environment are causing dramatic increases in hypothyroidism in children as well as in adults. A cost of hypothyroidism, infertility. For those of you out there who have infertility issues, you don't necessarily need in vitro fertilization. Why will your doctor know about that? Ka-ching, $40,000 a patient. But if you give thyroid, you give iron to optimize iron, even if the blood tests are normal in both cases, there's a host of natural remedies. As long as you're ovulating, you'll probably get pregnant even if you have infertility. That's one of the studies that our foundation is looking to do in the coming year or two, is a study on infertility using the protocol. But you don't have to wait. If you go on my website and look under topics from A to Z, and look, I think it's under infertility, or just do a search on infertility on my site, there will be an article on taking care of infertility naturally. But one of the main causes of infertility in this country is undiagnosed hypothyroidism with normal blood testing. And you give a little bit of armor thyroid, not Synthroid, the synthetic thyroid that doctors know about because it was patentable, but the armor thyroid, natural, bioidentical. And many people find their infertility goes away, their recurrent miscarriages go away, and a lot of the kids who have learning disabilities have it because the mother was hypothyroid.
You know, it amazes me, Jacob, that, I mean, you substitute one or two words in here, either nature or God, okay? Depends on what your bent is, but, you know, it just amazes me that, you know, that'd be very smart, but if you just got reasonable intelligence and you sort of pay attention to what's going on,
mm-hmm.
you'd have to go, you know, for whatever reason, you know, human beings were developed, you know, evolved, God put them in a certain environment, you know, and our environment has to have everything you possibly need to be healthy, or else we wouldn't be here like we were, mm-hmm. you know, before we muck it up. You know, and it's just crazy how people never, except for you and a few other people, they never think about nature and man in his natural state.
Mm-hmm.
I don't mean as a, you know, hunter-gatherer necessarily, but, you know, in a biologically normal environment where you have what you need and you get it at the reasonable, you know, supply rates,
mm-hmm.
that, you know, the body's pretty darn healthy,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it's designed to be healthy, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, but you have to, but if you don't look at native, if you don't look at it from a natural, holistic point of view, there's no way you can fix it because we're not smart enough to see everything that's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I find, and it's just, like, amazing. I'll give you a good example. There's this... Yeah, I moved to Curacao, you know, I told you, and so I got my permanent residency there finally. I got picked mm-hmm. up my card, so that's good.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I can go try to get a mortgage, okay? So it's a real pain for Americans sometimes because everybody's afraid of the United States because the IRS is our inquisition. So I finally got a bank, you know, stuff doing things. But in the midst of doing this, where I got this bank, now I met this really nice Dutch guy. He had a bad Achilles tendon, big runner. You know, I don't know how he pulled it, you know, initially, but like 2 years has been like not getting better.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so they want to do surgery on him. They did some injections and stuff. And, you know, basically, they haven't done crapola. You know, mm-hmm. and I go, you know, Franz, you know, haven't they put you on, you know, on like some natural inflammatories and make sure B vitamins are up and, you know, just sort of give you what we need. What nature would give you to heal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he goes, no, and they want to do surgery. I said, don't you dare get surgery. I'll be pissed. I'll be angry with you because you've got to be my friend now. So, you know, so I went out and picked up, you know, bromelain, all things I think would be helpful for, tendon to heal,
mm-hmm.
you know, because they don't even have laser therapy down there. Inferential, they don't have ionophoresis. I mean, to put some maybe temporary, mm-hmm. put some steroid on, just get the inflammation down because it's hard to get the tendon.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes you use medicines, but this is sort of a natural way. And so I brought him a nice little sack of stuff to take, you know. And I said, there's a lot of pills, so you know, start out slow. And you know, so I started on a Monday, so I was down there, and I came back and saw him on a Thursday. And I go, I know it's probably a little bit early, but how's your tendon feel? And he goes, you know, it's feeling better. I thought, well, it's probably placebo, you know. So, you know, 3 weeks later, he's going, you know, it's not so stiff in the morning when I get up, but I can actually move it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just from vitamins and some minerals and some, you know, glucosamine sulfate.
Mm-hmm.
Hot soaks, okay, to try to get the circulation up, to get the nutrients in it so it can finally heal.
Mm-hmm.
you know? And he goes, hey, man, this is like pretty good. This is like cheap. It's
yeah.
free. I go, yeah. You can't heal the, you know, unless I give you what you need, there's no point doing any other thing to you.
Mm-hmm. And the funny thing is, I mean, surgery and Achilles tendon. I mean, you think about it. If you give willow bark, and I talk about this in the Pain-Free 1-2-3 book, because we talk about each kind of pain. But if you look at willow bark, it's twice as effective as Motrin family medications. And head-on studies, as effective as Vioxx. Boswellia drops arthritis type of pain and inflammation pain. It's frankincense is the other name for Boswellia, by 90%. Even Sherry's. These are three very good anti-inflammatories. Mm-hmm. And there's a end pain or pain formula. You can get either one of those two products, have all three of those in it. And you give it 6 weeks and often even just a day or two. But I tell people it takes nature 6 weeks to really heal things. Fully. It takes a day to tear things down to the poison, which is what the medication is, and it takes weeks to build a house. But
Jane,
also...
What are the three things in your little formula? Yeah, willow bark and boswellia?
Willow bark, boswellia, and cherry.
Cherry extract?
Mm-hmm. And those three are wonderful. And for new listeners, I don't take money from any pharmaceutical companies or natural product companies. Products that I make through all
people
go to charity.
Or for interviews.
For interviews I will, but, you know, I ask. But
this one's free, okay? This one he does for free.
But you're so good, smart and good-looking, I forget, hey, you know, how can I say no? So it's, you know, these three things are wonderful. You can use things like turmeric or curcumin, but you need to add black pepper to it or your body doesn't really absorb it very well. So there's many natural anti-inflammatories. But again, Michael, I'm not against medications. And here's a good example. I'm just against how we use them, which is the most expensive one is what you're going to get. But you can actually take medications like Motrin, like Neurontin, like just a whole bunch of different things, and put them in a cream. And instead of soaking 200 pounds of meat to get 3 ounces of tendon, you can rub that cream right over the tendon. And within 2 weeks, you'll have the blood levels as if you're taking it by mouth. So now you've got 8 different medications that are very effective in the cream and no side effects, and it's pretty cheap because you need tiny, 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 tiny amounts to get to the 3 ounces of tendon. So we use medications pretty stupidly in this country based on, you don't make as much money on a cream because you only need a little medication. But the nutritional things, there's research that shows that calcific tendonitis and bursitis of the shoulder is often associated with a vitamin B12 deficiency because of poor digestion and low stomach acid. So if you get the nutrition optimized, you give the natural things, you can eliminate a large percent of medical problems much more safely, much more effectively, but the problem is much more cheaply.
Well, a nice problem is, too, as I used to tell people, is that what happens is that then, you know, you don't have to be like the world's expert in everything that exists out there.
Mm-hmm.
I tell patients, you know, I'm pretty smart, probably smarter than the other doctors you saw, but I'm not smart enough to know how everything works. But I am smart enough to take what science has shown our body needs,
mm-hmm.
you know, and give it to you. And then I'll let, you know, it's kind of like, you know, well, just mm-hmm. kill them all and let God sort out who doesn't. Well, in a sense, that's the thing. I don't know, you know, I can't have enough data to sort out everything, so I'll just give you what you need. And then I'll see how it works, and maybe have to pick something else up, but all those things we know. But you know what? At least you got what your body needs.
If you give your body what it needs, it's remarkable what it can heal, and it knows how to do it, like you said. And whether you believe that you're created by a beneficent God who loves us and put everything in nature that we need to be healthy and vital, or whether you believe that we evolved and our body over billions or millions of years came in contact with the environment and learned how to deal effectively with the things in the environment, but now you're giving them novel things that the body hasn't adapted to. And frankly, I don't see a conflict between those two ways of reasoning.
They're both beneficent.
So unless you think, you know, either way, it doesn't make sense to throw 80,000 chemicals at your body when they're proven to be toxic. But you know, we see a lot of these things, but let's go ahead and tell the listeners, they've been so patient with our talking about what's going on in the healthcare system. They deserve to learn how to lose the weight when they can't. So let's go ahead and give them a recipe. Number one, like I said, the thyroid. Find a holistic doctor. And if for those of you who are achy and tired, I'm going to recommend going to a place called the Fibromyalgia and Fatigue Centers. There's 14 centers around the country. If you go to www.fibroandfatigue.com, you can find one near you. For those of you who feel pretty healthy otherwise, except for maybe a little bit of tiredness, or just trouble losing weight, go to a holistic physician who can give you the thyroid based on your need clinically. And to find, there's over 1,000 board-certified ones in the United States. Go to www.holistic, H-O-L-I-S-T-I-C, board, B-O-A-R-D, .org. So, again, if you're just dealing with a weight issue but otherwise feel pretty good, go to a holistic doctor. They know how to treat it, and ask them for the Armour thyroid. And as long as you keep it in the normal range, not on the TSH, but the free T4 blood test, the TSH, don't even bother following up on treatment. It's a hard test. It's miserably unreliable. The studies show you're not going to get osteoporosis from it, and it's healthy. It will probably decrease your risk of heart disease and lower cholesterol and such. So get your thyroid optimized. Adjust it to the dose that feels the best to you. Do not adjust it based on blood testing, or else you'll be wearing a size 4 shoe because 3 to 14 is a normal range. Adjust to what feels best. Check a free T4. That's the only test you need to check, F-R-E-E, capital T, 4. Make sure it's in the normal range for safety, and you're good to go. The second thing would be nutritional deficiencies. When you are deficient in vitamins and minerals, your body's going to crave more food than you need, and your metabolism's going to be sluggish. So that's just what it is. And this is the first case in recorded human history where we have high-calorie malnutrition, where people are obese and still malnourished when it comes to vitamins and minerals, because the vitamins and minerals have been stripped out of the food and food processing, and the soil depletion. There's a host of reasons for this. But you want to correct the nutritional deficiencies so your body gets the message that it has enough of what it needs. People ask, what vitamin or mineral do I need? And the answer is, all of them.
And, probably a little extra of them for a while.
Yeah, and not the RDAs, or what I'd like to call, lovingly, the ridiculous dietary allowances. You want to go ahead and give your body optimal levels. And it's funny, some people will have the argument, they say, well, you just pee some of these out in your urine, so all you're doing is making expensive urine, you know, that kind of stupidity.
Yeah, if you pee in your urine, you know you might not have enough, you know.
Yeah, well, what I tell those people is don't drink any water, because you just pee it out in your urine.
Yeah.
And this way they'll be dead pretty quickly and get out of your hair when you're trying to get well. So I like to give optimal levels. There's something more is not always better. You know, too much beta-carotene, too much vitamin E can be toxic, especially if you're not giving the whole family of that nutrient, which is why they're toxic at the high levels. But on the other hand, for many things like the B vitamins, you want it around the 50 milligram level. And that may be 25 to 50 times the RDA, but you want it about 50 milligram each level or to 100. I like to use vitamin powders. There's one called the Energy Revitalization System by Enzymatic Therapy. You can take 1/2 to 1 scoop a day. The box is 1 scoop a day.
Some boxes are way too much sometimes, I think, you know.
Yeah.
They haven't done it for a while.
Well, I think they want to sell more powder, so they say 1 scoop, but it's really 1/2 to 1 scoop a day, and I keep poking at the company. I think they're eventually going to change it. But it's outstanding. It replaces 35 tablets of supplements. You take one drink in the morning, you're good to go, that one capsule. And if you think I'm teasing about the 35 tablets, I lecture a lot of times at the annual conference of the world's experts on nutrition, the IACN, and I have 400 physicians, PhDs, researchers, and I throw out the challenge. Get what's in the 1 scoop of the powder and less than 35 tablets, I'll give each $50. And they haven't been able to do it. So, I mean, it's a really good way to make it simple. And again, any health food store will have the Energy Revitalization System. I think it's good for most everybody. But, you know, everybody's different. Try it and see how it feels for you. You can get on my website also, vitality101.com. If you buy from me, I make a couple bucks on it. If you go to the health food store, I make nothing. So do whichever way feels best to you, in case you're worried about a plug here. But that's what I take in the morning. It's just a really good way to give overall nutritional support. It just makes it easy, and it's really well-balanced. It has exactly the right balances of each of the different nutrients that we need in it. So get the nutritional deficiencies handled. Especially you want to make sure there's some special nutrients that can be helpful. Acetyl L-carnitine can help as well a little bit, because if you're low in that nutrient, and most people with chronic fatigue and many with muscle pain, if you do the muscle biopsies, their carnitine levels are low. And if your carnitine is low, you cannot burn fat, and you have to turn carbohydrates into fat.
That's one of the two major areas that we were talking before.
Mm-hmm.
Carnitine area is like major, you know, hub. of fat oxidation, as you say, the, you know, they got the citrate side there. So, but let me say, you know, if you can get propionic L-carnitine, because I was just looking at the paper, and it turns out that form has been used, you know, for some people with claudication.
Mm-hmm.
And if you actually look at the, you know, the extraction ratios with the liver, you know, mm-hmm. in rats, you know, giving them, you know, perfusions,
mm-hmm.
you actually get like five times the amount of take up, and you know, tissue levels go up, but much, much further. And of course, they get converted to you know, ALC and back to LC and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But have you ever come across that as actually something that's available?
I haven't seen it, but I still, my main concern, and the reason I don't use L-carnitine, is because it doesn't get across the cell walls and especially into the body's energy furnaces called the mitochondria. The acetyl is like a little carrier that takes it. It's like a key that opens the door into the cell and gets the carnitine in where it needs to do the job. So the question with the propionic is whether it would be getting into the mitochondria.
It wasn't like faster. I mean, you know, it's like... I just happened to read it before the show today.
Yeah.
You know, I'm saying that the ALC is about twice the take-up of, you know, just L-carnitine, but they're pretty, pretty slow compared to, like, the propionic one. It's, like, seven times faster.
Well, I'd love to see the studies when you see it, if you can go ahead and email it to me or fax it to me. Because I've never seen the propionyl carnitine, but just regular L-carnitine, which is what most doctors use, you need massive levels, and it's just not very effective. If you want to make your own carnitine, eat lysine, eat things like, we could take...
mushrooms and... like mushrooms and methionine, which has a lot of lysine in.
Well, the lysine, you could actually eat a lot of glycine. Just take the lysine tablets. It's probably going to be the easier way, because you're not going to get high enough levels by mouth. But lysine tablets are pretty cheap. But lysine has its problems, too, because it may drop your growth hormone levels, and it has its other issues. But I think that basically the acetyl L-carnitine, and more is not better. You want to take 1,000 milligrams to 1,500 milligrams a day, just for about 4 months. If you take higher levels, you actually lose the effectiveness. So don't take too much. I'm not too concerned about which brand. Get a well-known company brand, but any of those from a good company should be okay. But 1,500 milligrams a day, it's not going to make you lose the weight, but it'll make it possible for you to lose the weight.
How about sleep? Sleep's a big favorite of yours.
You know where I'm going next.
That's because you sent me an outline.
Oh,
you forgot, right?
Oh, that's right.
Why is he so smart today?
And here I thought it was only your natural brilliance. Well, if you look at sleep, Michael, they call it getting your beauty sleep for a reason. Sleep is where we make our growth hormone. And it's not just any sleep, but the stage 4, 3 and 4 deep sleep is when your body does the growth hormone production. Growth hormone is what's been called the fountain of youth hormone.
Mm-hmm.
And it's critical for increasing lean muscle mass and decreasing fat. Now, the same applies to testosterone as well. So for men, you want to optimize the testosterone. You may put on weight, but your belt size will go down because muscle is heavier than fat. So, you know, we want to get your beauty sleep because you're going to make a growth hormone. It'll leave you looking younger. It'll leave you feeling better, make your pains tend to go away, but it'll also make you lose weight. And the studies show that you're 30% more likely to be obese if you're getting inadequate sleep. So, one, you're going to have the growth hormone issue, and two, the hormones that control appetite, called ghrelin and leptin, are also largely controlled during sleep. So you're going to be, you know, have an increased appetite. So you can take an appetite suppressant and feel hyper and jittery and amphetamine, or you can get your sleep and balance down your appetite. So getting your 8 hours of sleep a night, very, very helpful. Now, main problem is people don't make time for sleep, and some people, when they're under stress, get insomnia.
Mm-hmm.
So they can't sleep. So if you just have poor high sleep hygiene, if you say you don't have time for sleep, let me ask the listener a question. Do you read the local paper? Do you watch the evening news? Now, that's an hour a day. Now, let me ask you the next question. One, do you think what you're getting in that is really accurate? And I'm going to tell you right now, I'm quoted in the news media so much. I mean, day in, day out. And I take a look at these things, I say, and it says blah, 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 and I say, what idiot said that? And I say, says Dr. Teitelbaum. I mean, it's just, you know, you'll spend an hour with them, and you'll wonder where the hell they got what they're putting in the paper that you said.
Mr. Hyde, Dr. Jekyll phenomenon. You see, you're Dr. Jekyll, and they always make us into Mr. Hyde.
Well, no. I mean, they make me out to be a very smart person, and they say I'm wonderful. But what they do is the reporter figures out what they want to say, and then they find experts to say it. And the expert doesn't say it, they make believe the expert did. And it bears virtually no resemblance to the truth. I realize I don't know much of what's going on out there unless I've seen it firsthand. But I look at the New York Times, I see the article they did on fibromyalgia, and it is. They may as well have said that the Earth is flat, and nobody went to the moon, and that people fall up. I mean, it was utter nonsense and rubbish. And if that's indicative of the rest of what they're printing, and I'm suspecting for most newspapers it is, you're wasting your time misinforming yourself looking at the newspaper or watching the evening news. It's mostly sensationalistic rubbish.
Keeps you from sleeping, too.
Yeah, go online and search around. You can get more information about what's going on out there and just use your common sense. But what I'm saying is take that time that you're wasting with that and add it to your sleep. If you can't fall asleep, you have insomnia, there's herbals that are wonderful, wild lettuce, Jamaican dogwood, hops, theanine, valerian, passion flower. All six of those can be found in a product called the Revitalizing Sleep Formula. 1 to 4 capsules an hour before bedtime or at bedtime. People sleep great. Any health food store will have it. My website has it. It's easy to find online. Revitalizing Sleep Formula. Really, really good sleep mix.
Can I ask you a question? Mm-hmm. Just from your experience. Because, you know, I used to do a lot of, you know, growth hormone monitoring stuff for people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what I noticed was just, you know, I got a lot of data over the years and things. Mm-hmm. You know, is that the growth hormone levels in people are actually worse than it was done like 20, 30 years ago. You know, you started doing like 20 years ago on the baselines by age.
Yep.
And the lean body mass and stuff. And so it seemed to me that...
But Michael, there's no problem. Come on. Don't you know all you do is you lower the normal range. And
yeah,
solved.
Yeah. Well, I'm asking, but I've got more questions. Okay, no. But my anecdotal conclusion was, okay, just from talking to patients and reading around, that it seemed to me that a lot of the growth hormone, not just growth hormone, but, you know, IGF low levels I was seeing,
mm-hmm.
seemed to be probably more likely due to bad sleep, because when I would talk to people, they'd all have insomnia problems.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the guys that were closer to the age limits, you know, thought they slept pretty well. Have you seen that? So you think, I mean,
absolutely.
It's more than chemicals, and then growth hormones, but maybe sleep?
It's both. You certainly have the environmental endocrine blockers, but most of the growth hormone is released with exercise, sex, and deep sleep. Those are the three things. And we're not exercising, probably not having as much sex. Sperm counts are dropping.
Chemicals.
yeah, in part. But the poor sleep, we've gone from an average 9 hours of sleep per person 100 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
That was the average night sleep in the U.S., 9 hours a night, down to about 6 hours or so a night. That's a 30% pay cut, and the growth hormone levels drop concomitantly. But as along with that, you'll find if you have the problem of tired and can't sleep, you've actually, because that's a paradox, if you're tired, you should sleep all day and all night, you've actually blown a fuse called the hypothalamus. That circuit breaker is offline, because that area uses the most energy for its size of anywhere in the body. So during an energy crisis, which Americans are facing day in and day out, you blow fuses, that area goes offline. And you can tell because you can't sleep even though you're exhausted. You'll find that you get the, and that's what chronic fatigue syndrome and fibromyalgia are. Mm-hmm. There's an average 32-pound weight gain. We've done two studies that show the average weight gain is 32 pounds in chronic fatigue syndrome and fibromyalgia. And when you treat these areas with the metabolism, the weight finally comes down. Otherwise, people can't lose the weight. But you'll see the low growth hormone, very common in CFS and fibromyalgia, and a number of studies have looked at this. But I will note, if your listeners out there, tired, achy, brain fog, can't sleep, are basically exhausted and can't sleep, you've got hypothalamic dysfunction. Your physician's going to be clueless about how to treat it because the tests will look normal. Go to Fibromyalgia and Fatigue Center, www.fibroandfatigue.com, and they'll get you well.
Well, unfortunately, running out of time, and that's my fault, but I think it's also useful for people to understand the system they're working in. So I want to thank you again, and if you have it in your heart in a month or so to do, you know, continue with all your great knowledge for the world, I would appreciate it.
I'll be happy to.
And we and I can talk about what to talk about.
We'll pick how to get rid of pain.
Yep.
How about arthritis and migraines next time?
Sounds good. Thank you, my friend. You take care, and I really appreciate you, and I look forward to truly coming to meet you in person one day.
I'll fix you in my time. We'll chat about how to heal the healthcare system.
And I hope your picture looks like you are. I'll get confused. One person, my producer, changed her hair, you know, everything.
Uh-huh.
I met her finally. I go, he goes, hi, Michael. I go, who are you? You look like your picture. Okay, so I guess you can go back to bed or go to work, I guess.
Yeah, time to get on the day. Sun's coming up.
Thanks, Jacob.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining Dr. Michael John Kell on Mind, Brain, and Body. Please tune in next Friday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time for another edition of Mind, Brain, and Body, right here on Voice America Health and Wellness.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
Life can